Welcome to the Hackberry House of Chosun. My name is Bob, reading today from The Scarlet Threads. We're in part four. We've been tracing a mystery throughout the Bible and throughout history of Babylon. It's called Babylon. It is a city, and it's a lot more than a city. It is a way of life, and it's pervading America now in the 20th century, here at the beginning of the 20th century. Actually, we're in the 1920s now. So let's come back to America. We were dealing with other parts of the world, but in America, in the 20s, is heard at this time the prophetic voice of a Dr. Henry Ironside, hailed by Bob Jones University and Wheaton College as a mighty giant of the faith, and given by them honorary degrees. He publishes in 1920 a commentary on Revelation. Now that's just 100 years ago. Think now. A commentary on Revelation, which states premises about Roman Catholicism that are not unlike the conclusions that I am giving you. This is not a new thing that I've been teaching. He says, there is no mistaking her identity. Pagan Rome was the lineal successor of Babylon. Papal Rome absorbed the Babylonian mysteries, and the Rome of the beast in the last days will be the seat of the revived satanic system that began with Nimrod and his infamous consort Semiramis, which has, from that day to this, been opposed to everything that is of God. He goes further. It's a lamentable fact that Babylon's principles and practices are rapidly but surely pervading the churches that escaped from Rome at the time of the Reformation. We may see evidences of it in the wide use of high-sounding ecclesiastical titles, in the revival of holy days and church feasts like Lent and Good Friday and Easter and Christ's Mass or Christmas. I quite admit, says Ironside, that some of these festivals, if divested of any ecclesiastical character, may be observed in innocence in the home. But when they are turned into church festivals, they certainly come under the condemnation of Galatians 4, 9 through 11. All of them are Babylonish in their origin and were at one time linked with the Ashtoreth and Tammuz mystery worship. We do well to remember that Babylon is a mother with daughters who are likely to partake of their mother's characteristics. End of quote. Well, for 18 years, he pastored the Moody Church in Chicago. Only two Sundays in all of those years was no one found at the altar seeking to know Christ. He was a man of faith, fruit, and conviction. But this one conviction regarding Rome would probably keep him from pastoring at most great churches, including Moody, in our day. In 1927, another Henry Halley, publishes his Bible Handbook, from which I have quoted freely already. This book also is not mentioned quite so much in many Protestant, even evangelical circles these days. And by the way, all that has to do with the Roman Catholic Church and it's the truth of the evil of the things that happened in the Middle Ages, that's all been taken out of the 26th edition of that book and following, because after he died, his family thought they needed to clean him up a little bit, and they changed it. And if you would get a Halley's Bible Handbook today, you would see nothing but sweet and wonderful things in church history about Rome. But I mentioned these names to show that in the first 20 years of the 20th century, a strong witness against Romanism still abounded. But for the first time in U.S. history, at that time, a Roman Catholic is running for president, still 1927. We've already considered the papal attitudes toward Americanism and the philosophy of involvement foisted upon the American Catholic population. We know why Catholics want to come to power in any land. And so we're not surprised to see Al Smith challenged by Protestants who quote from the Syllabus of Errors in 1864, the papal statement which attacks the separation of church and state, among other American-held ideals. Smith's reply is that he has never heard of any syllabus. Later, he has heard of it, you know how politicians are, but he labels it obsolete. That's a flip-flopping politician. Sounds pretty familiar, right? Well, Smith goes on to put in print his personal creed to set everybody at ease. Now, as you read his confession of faith and as you listen to it, the natural question is this a true Catholic of that day? Does his religion mean anything to him? If he takes his religion so lightly, do I want him as my president? Or is he just lying to me? If you're a Catholic, you've got to be asking those questions in 1927. If you're a Protestant, you don't want him in at all. So he's either fabricating this whole viewpoint or being false to his convictions. And after he is elected, will he change his views suddenly? Can we read his lips and believe it when he says, I will not be an instrument of Rome to take over this country? Here's the actual statement. Quote, Al Smith, I recognize no power in the constitutions of my church to interfere with the operations of the Constitution of the United States or the enforcement of the law of the land. I believe in absolute freedom of conscience for all men and in equality of all churches, all beliefs before the law as a matter of right and not as a matter of favor. I believe in the absolute separation of church and state. I believe that no tribunal of any church has any power to make any decree of any force in the law of the land. I believe in the support of the public school as one of the cornerstones of American liberty. It's from the Atlantic Monthly, April 1927. Now one wonders if the original version added, and the Holy Father approves of this whole statement. Well, was Papa in on this statement so that the good sap, as mentioned before, could be infused into America's veins? Or was Papa somewhere weeping as he read of one of his sons so blatantly denying standard Catholic policy? There's another option to all of this. Maybe Al really believes that his church's power structure is no threat to the security of the United States. Maybe he's a typical American Catholic, at least in our day, who doesn't bother to look behind the scenes at what Rome really is all about, or read the history books about papal domination of past eras. Maybe he's just as shocked at America's response as many listeners to me will be. It's to the average Catholic that I appeal. Do you really know what the Roman, that is initiated and headquartered in the city of Rome, Roman Catholic that is universal in its appeal and reign, do you know what that church is all about? Maybe Mr. Smith is similarly unfamiliar with the Manual of Christian Doctrine, published in 1926, Philadelphia. It's an official Catholic book approved by one Cardinal Doherty. Catholic children growing up in these United States during the days of Smith's candidacy are led through this catechetical inquiry. Question, why is the Catholic Church superior to the state? Answer, because the end to which the Catholic Church tends is the noblest of all ends. Question, in what order or respect is the state subordinate to the Catholic Church? Answer, in the spiritual order and in all things referring to that order. Question, what right has the Pope in virtue of this supremacy? Answer, the right to annul those laws or acts of government that would injure the salvation of souls or attack the natural rights of citizens. Now, knowing which church, I put the word Catholic in there. It doesn't say Catholic anywhere in the statement, in the question answer. It just says church. But knowing which church that it refers to makes this an irksome series of responses. I can think of some questions and answers of my own. Question, who, though Lord of all, became a man, dwelt among us, and submitted to every human authority placed over him? Answer, Jesus, the Messiah. Question, did this Jesus ever try to pit his church against the world's governments until his return? Answer, no. Question, were the followers of Jesus likewise exhorted to obey earthly authority except when the preaching of the gospel was at stake? Answer, most assuredly. Question, when challenged, imprisoned, beaten, and otherwise tortured by these governments, were the true followers of Jesus ever encouraged by their leaders to rebel against secular authority? Answer, not once. The manual's implications have to do with the Roman Church, not all churches. Catholic teaching is that the rights of citizens include the right of all men to be Roman Catholics and promulgate Catholicism. Oh, equality for all churches? Oh, nonsense. 1929, the Catholic institution has itself named the state religion of Italy. Would it accept a similar position in the United States? Oh, is the Pope a Catholic? Oh, yes. And so, Al Smith, do you really believe what you're saying? All churches are equal? And as to the separation of church and state, let's go back to the manual, the questions and answers. This is children in school learning this. Question, what then is the principal obligation of heads of state? Answer, their principal obligation is to practice the Catholic religion, and that word Catholic is there this time, themselves, and as they are in power, to protect and defend it. Question, has the state the right and the duty to proscribe schism or heresy? Answer, yes, it has the right and the duty to do so both for the good of the nation and for that of the faithful themselves. Religious, that's in Catholic terms, unity is the principal foundation of social unity. Question, when may the state tolerate dissenting worship? Note, the church never does. Answer, when these worships have acquired a sort of legal existence, consecrated by time and accorded by treaties or covenants. Question, may the state separate itself from the church, Catholic Church? No. Answer, because it may not withdraw from the supreme rule of Christ. Question, on what conditions are civil laws binding? Answer, that the legislating power has no law contrary to the natural law or to the positive divine law. Otherwise, a civil law is entirely null and should not be observed. Informed citizens of the 1928 election refused Al Smith the right to lead America. 32 years later, misinformed Americans threw caution to the wind. John Kennedy, raised in an era when the aforequoted manual was still being taught as gospel truth in Catholic schools, somehow John Kennedy convinced us that he too was above papal edicts. We were not really allowed to find out what might have been with John Kennedy. But times change, people forget, and that's the reason for books such as this one that you're hearing. Yeah, I'm living now in 2021 after a strange election. We won't go into that. But a Roman Catholic is our president. Again, he's not a good one. I don't know if he says that, but the church says that. He's certainly not obeying a lot of their rules. But he is Roman Catholic, and nobody even thought of that. I mean, that was just nowhere in the discussion when he was being supposedly elected. Well, that's all we have time for this time. We're going to talk about Mussolini next time. There's a Roman connection here. There's a Babylonian connection from Genesis through Revelation through church history. I believe you'll see it if you look. Thank you so much for being with us today. Other things that we could talk about. I always love to have you go over the website and just see what's there. I think you'll find some good things really are there. God bless you. This is the Hackberry House of Chosun, and Lord willing, we get to talk again real soon. Bye-bye.